Anyway, your name is Sills.
Yes.
Sills is very troubled about earning a coin. So, Sills, why don't you tell everybody why you're bothered, and then maybe we can talk about it.
Point where, you know, a new episode, something's happening, in my mind, I think, you know, that's not how I would have handled it, and even learning them before seeing them give explanation why he didn't say motion will be back, you know, maybe we've miscalculated, or any of the simple approaches, it just bothers me, and going through yesterday, that in terms of the leadership role, there, certain things make sense, but at some point, you know, when it really breaks down, that the people are, you know, Yoshua's receiving a war from a distance, that you would think that, I don't want to say, okay, stop, enough. And even as when Moshe comes back, he says, what did they do to you to get you to cause them to sin? It just seems troubling. In summary, the question that I would pose is, let's say Moshe didn't come back and he came back. At what point would Aaron have just thrown his hands up and, okay, this is not...
You know, that part was not a great concern, because Aaron was certain that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to return, so he had no doubt about that. Aaron's calculations were intact, and we have no reason to believe that he did not, in fact, inform the heir of Rav of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was not supposed to come back today, and that they insisted that their calculations were correct, and that Aaron was a what people today would call an apologist. But there's another thing going on here, which is very common in our experience. My brother, Blessed Mary, once said the following, that the king of Israel has an obligation to write one sefer Torah, in addition to the one that he inherited from his predecessor. So there's a sefer Torah that he inherits, and a sefer Torah that he has to write. And the one that he inherits, he keeps in a treasure vault, and the other one accompanies him wherever he goes. When he sits at lunch, when he sits on his throne, when he judges, when he's legislating, when he goes out to war, it's always with him, the Sefer Torah. So my brother, blessed memory, from Denver, he questioned, what's the point? We understand that a person needs a Sefer Torah that always escorts him, because we do need, whatever we're doing, to consult. Well, what's the point in having one in the treasure vault? So he said at the time that Klal Yisrael needs two qualities of Torah. We need, in our lives, let's speak on a communal level, but we can also bring it into our own personal case. But we need, let's say, as a nation, as a community, we need those people who interact with life on a day-to-day, a very common pedestrian level. We have farms, we have businesses, we have stores, we have banks, we have furnaces that break down, and cars that need to have the oil changed, and roofs that sometimes leak. I mean, we have just everyday kind of stuff. And we have an obligation to interact with that everyday world in ways which transform those activities into acts that are God-conscious acts, so that they become choices and acts of service. That each one of those moments becomes a moment over which we could lift the flag of God's sovereignty. The grandiose scene would be, this guy walked on the moon and put up an American flag. That's very dramatic. But the fact is that it's something of no less drama when we can do something which is very ordinary and turn it into, to claim it as a moment of divine service. It's a magnificent moment to plant the flag of God's sovereignty over an ordinary conversation. At the same time, that interaction is very complex, because the decisions that we're called on to make are rarely simple. And we find ourselves asking questions you get a call about a shidduch. What are you allowed to say? What are you not allowed to say? You get a call up about somebody who's trying to struggle back from drugs and is looking for a job. How much do you say? What do you say? You're obligated to tell a person. You know, you're a business person and you travel. You have to go someplace and it turns out that the plane was canceled 17 times. You're sitting at the airport. You haven't eaten all day. And now you're looking at what's available there. You know, which of your rules do you bend? What am I allowed to do here? What am I going to bend? I'm dying. What am I going to take? The point is that life on a moment-by-moment basis presents not simple decisions but complex decisions. So you find yourself using a theorem. You got to use a theorem. The rabbis use a theorem. There are situations that are so... that are so painful, you need to use a theorem. So what do? I remember once talking to Moshe Feinstein's going to the Baruch about a question, and when I finished asking the question, he said, Medaf Mekelson, you gotta be lenient. And I said to him, how? Well, tell me where I should do. Where? Where is the place that I'm supposed to be? Medaf Mekelson. Yeah, he said, I don't know, but you gotta be Mekel. I didn't know how to do it. I just didn't know how to do it. Life is not simple. And it's for that reason that we're here. We're here because we're supposed to make those hairline decisions and try to make them without the prejudice of ego and the bias of self-interest. We have to try to make them because we think that it's right and hope that our thinking is clear and has integrity. So we're constantly making those kinds of decisions. So my brother, Blessed Memory, said that Melech Yisrael, he's carrying a Sefer Torah with him, he's trying to make Torah decisions about the kingdom and about his personal life, about everything that's going on. He says, you go out to battle, you take the Sefer Torah with you, and there's bullets flying all over. You want to win this battle, so the Sefer Torah doesn't escape the battle. You come back from battle, you have to check. You have to have something to check. Make sure you still got the same Sefer Torah that you started with. So he said, you got to have one Sefer Torah that's in your treasure vault. And you need, we need our, in a certain sense, our Gedalia Torah, who are in some ways not engaged in that terrible struggle. So when we say, and some of us look at, let's say, the many kolel yungalite, and they say to ourselves, you know, oh, that's a nice life. They don't have to deal with the nisyonos that we have to deal with. They don't have to deal with secretaries who come dressed to the hilt. We have to find ways of keeping our thoughts in the right place and certainly our actions in the right place. They don't have to do it. That's a nice existence. So, number one, it's not necessarily such an easy existence. Just as a parenthetical thing for some people to learn all day is a struggle. But we do need a place where from time to time we can consult and make sure that we have not lost our connection. We need that place where we can make sure that it's still the same Sefer Torah. So we need that in our own lives also. The Mishkan is not only out there, but we need a Mishkan also. And in our own personal Mishkan, we need a Kodesh HaKadoshim. We need a place which is inviolate. We need to make sure that there are certain principles and certain values. We don't compromise. We don't go there. We just don't. We don't enter that Holy of Holies to make adjustments. In a certain sense, Klal Yisrael has a Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Zohar called Moshe Rabbeinu Sheshvina de Malka. He is the advocate of the king. And they call Aaron HaKohen Sheshvina de Matkanusa. He is the advocate of the queen. The queen, in this case, is Bnei Yisrael. So Aaron HaKohen struggles to be the best advocate that Bnei Yisrael can have. And there are many choices that he could have had. Moshe Rabbeinu, to some extent, is able to be the transmitter of Torah because he is, in a certain sense, he is on the mountain. He is removed. He has the wherewithal to transmit unadulterated, pure word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe Rabbeinu, like the Kodesh HaKadoshim, does not allow for compromise, does not allow for... It can't go there. Moshe Rabbeinu is, in a certain, some extent, Chur is an extension of Moshe Rabbeinu. Chur gets up and says, can't do this, and they wipe him out. Aaron HaKohen recognizes that if he gets up and he says the same thing and he gets wiped out, that Kol Yisrael has no, there just, there's nothing left. There's no advocacy. And he tries to, had he done the same thing, which Moshe Rabbeinu really felt, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he has no other essence. His entire essence is the absolute word, the pure word of Hashem. There's no wiggle room for him. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but that's basically his position. Aaron HaKohen is on the ground. Aaron HaKohen recognizes that the furnace is breaking, that there's such a thing as Shasat Chak, times of extenuating circumstances, and there's Hesed Milum, where there are people who can't suffer certain losses, and the Shulchan Aruch makes allowances for, you know, there are some things that you would put in one way. If it's a poor person and he has no choice, you have to allow for Hesed Milum and stuff. So Aaron HaKohen is on the ground, and he recognizes that this is a time of crisis, and he has to buy some time. I mean, there are many, many equations going on in the mind of Aaron HaKohen. So he's certain Moshe Rabbeinu is going to come down. He has, and he's looking to some extent to do damage control. Had he taken the position of Chur, God would have found another way. And there were all of these options. Aaron chose this because he felt that this was, in terms of advocacy for Klal Yisrael, this was what he felt was an act of service to Kodesh Baruch Hu. He made a choice, and that was his best choice. Later on, when God is looking for somebody to be the Kohen and God, he recognizes that there's really nobody better than Aaron, because Aaron has a broken heart. He is, in a certain sense, the quintessential broken heart of Klal Yisrael. There's nobody better to represent Israel and Yom Kippur than Aaron HaKohen. And what qualified him was his role in the eagle, which was a wrong-right answer, or a right-wrong answer. I'm not sure which, but whatever it was one of those answers that we make every day when we're trying to do our best. And then we recognize that in doing our best, that it wasn't the perfect solution. Aaron HaKohen was absolutely faithful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There wasn't a moment in which he was part of what he did. And he was absolutely faithful to Klal Yisrael because he was trying his best to minimize the damage. And because he was on the battleground, he chose. And he was wounded. And God gave him the Purple Heart. So he is Kohen. He's the Kohen I go. Because Aaron is a great broken man.